Oh, tonight.
Okay, you screwed me up here.
Okay, tonight one of our speakers is Nancy N. Please give her a warm welcome.
Hi, I'm Nancy and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Nancy.
And this is the first time I have spoken in front of a group of people, and it is really terrifying up here. But I see a lot of familiar faces, and it's still really terrifying up here. So I'm going to try to get through it. I have 2.5 years in AA. One of the biggest things that has helped me has been the service that I've done. My nature is to isolate, and I can still sort of isolate and do a lot of the stuff I do. But I'll go back to my background. I was born on the East Coast. My dad was a Marine in World War II. He did several tours in the South Pacific. He came home with malaria and PTSD. My mom was a wave. She was very young. She ran away from home and joined the Navy. She met my dad. She hated him. They got married 3 months later. For 60 years. He brought her 1,000 miles away from where she grew up. She didn't drive. She had 4 kids. My family valued male children, and I was the 3rd daughter, so you can imagine their disappointment when I was born. But they eventually got their son. I will tell you that I love both my parents and that they did the very best they could. And I did better than them, and God, my son is doing so much better than I did. And they could only do what they knew, the way they had been raised, and try to improve on that. Unfortunately, it was an extraordinarily dysfunctional home. The parents each chose my older sisters, one or the other, and there was constant warfare. And as much as they wanted a son to carry on the name, they totally destroyed him emotionally. He was 5 years younger than I was, and I had to watch that, and there was nothing I could do, as they just shredded him, told him he was a loser. It was very difficult to watch, and I saw him after 25 years, and he just showed every day on his face, and he was really... continues to be destroyed. My sisters left home at 20. I was 17. I went to college, and I came home briefly, and then I was gone. I found somebody totally inappropriate to marry. He was a drinker and a city boy, and I was this really naive person, but I was crazy about him. And we had a child after 3 years, and then he was gone. He said, "I don't want the responsibility of a wife and a child." I thought, "Oh, that's good. You've got both." So I had to go back home with my tail between my legs. I'd run away from home to get married. And my parents took me in, and my dad told me I was 22. He said, "You are used goods, and no man will ever want you. You have a child, and no man will ever want you." And I believed that. So I went to secretarial school, and within 6 months, my son and I moved out of the house. There was also other tauntings and stuff that went on, and just made it very difficult to live there. My son and I got a job. My son and I were doing okay. I wanted to have a man in his life. I was a loser. Nobody would want me. So I went to a bar after a softball game with some friends, and I met my second husband. He also had PTSD. He had been a heroin addict when he was in Vietnam. And got out of the service by telling on who had sold him the heroin. And he had mental problems. And I was just a baby. I was 25. And he got along so well with my son. My sister said that's because they're both the same age mentally. But they'd watch cartoons together. And I always felt that there needed to be a balance between this feminist side of me and you know, having a masculine influence for them. We got married, which was horrific. We separated. I got pregnant. He was in bed with somebody else. I came home, and he was in bed with somebody else and left. And so I went through my pregnancy with my second son alone. My family was not supportive of the pregnancy, neither was my husband. And my father said, "Whatever is wrong with his father will be wrong with him." And my mother said, "It's a piece of tissue." And, you know, there was a lot. So I thought, "Well, F all of you. I'm doing this." And unfortunately, what's wrong with his father is wrong with him. But he's my son, and I love him. 2 weeks before I was supposed to go back to work, after I had my second child, I lost my job. I got a letter in the mail with a check saying you're fired, which you wouldn't be able to do today. But back then you could. So after I felt sorry for myself for a weekend, I collected unemployment. I started a typing service, and I babysat for kids to put food on the table. We weren't getting child support from the first one, and the second one I had to go to court to try to get anything, and it was $33 a week, and that lasted 5 years, and then he was gone. After a year, I realized I needed to do something, because obviously I wasn't very good at marriage, so I went back to college, and my parents were kind enough to pay for that. And I graduated with high honors and had to sell my house. So I thought, well, why don't I go to California? I'll meet George Lucas, and we'll get married. I'll be an editor. My degree was in film, communications, radio, television, and film. I thought, hey, he did Star Wars. He would, you know, he'd be a good dad for my kids. So I sold everything, put the kids in the car. I had come out a couple times. I'd never been on a plane before, and I came out. I was like, wow. It's like being John Glenn, who was an astronaut, for those of you who are too young to know. It was like being an astronaut the first time the plane. I was on a plane that took off. We came out here. I had rented a house, which I couldn't afford. And within 6 weeks, I got a job at Warner Brothers. Now, my maiden name was Warner. And one of the things my dad had said when I said, I'm going to California, he said, you have got a death wish. What the hell's wrong with you? And my mother said, well, if you can't make it in Philadelphia, what makes you think you'll make it in L.A.? So as I wrote to them both with my notepad that said Nancy Warner Gates was my name at the time, it was kind of like, see, I can do this. I can do this. My second son did not do well when he moved out here. And by age six, he was with a psychiatrist. And she said to me, if you had the right kind of insurance, I would put him in the hospital for 3 months and try to figure out what's going on with him. And so I agonized over that, and finally my boss said, what's wrong? And I told him, and he had my insurance changed immediately. So at age eight, my younger boy went to UCLA neuropsychiatric ward. And thinking of my brother and how my parents had destroyed him verbally, and knowing I hadn't done that to my child, but maybe moving was too much for him, my mission was, my reasoning was, if I put him in the hospital, they can see what's wrong with him, and then he'll be better. He'll have the resources, I'll understand, I'll know what to do, and, you know, and in a perfect world, that might have happened. He was hospitalized again at UCLA when he was 12. At 16, by the time he was 16, he was dual diagnosis. So I had him down in San Diego at a residential treatment facility. I was obsessed with fixing him, helping him, making sure nobody could stand him, because he isn't a nice person. But I thought, I love him. My parents didn't love him. His father never saw him, never loved him. Nobody loves this child but me. And it's my fault that things are happening this way. It was my choice. This is what I did. And that's what I lived with for a long, long, long time. My drinking got to be a problem probably maybe 3 or 4 years ago. You know, I would drink, but I was, you know, I wasn't drinking that much. What changed? My kids were out of the house. My son is in and out of jail continuously. I had let him come home. I said, I'll buy you a truck. I'll put you in school. We'll get you together, you know, and he can't do that. He just can't do that. That's just, he can't do it. I married my husband 10 years ago, and he has always been totally non-judgmental. He has a brother who was a heroin addict. Never said anything bad about my son. And my son always felt that, you know, somehow this man was trying to come between us, and it was never true. And I would say that that was the beginning of a change that then AA sort of pushed through all the way. His folks were loving. They were never judgmental. They never told me I was a loser. They never told me I couldn't do it. They never told me I was deformed or whatever. I got into trouble with my drinking. We sold our house down in Palmdale. Should have made me drink anyway. And we stayed in the Elks parking lot for 3 months. And if anybody's been to the Elks Bar, we were there for Halloween, we were there for Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, and Super Bowl. And I got to tell you, they make a really good drink. I mean, one drink, I always had measured my drinks, 4 ounces a day. Damn, the first drink was 4 ounces. And it became a problem. I started to have the gnawing and the cravings and the, you know, I was always a little edgy and irritated. But I thought, I'm really in trouble here. And a couple of weeks later, we moved into our house in February, and a couple of weeks later, there was a family. I was going by a park that they were having a baseball game, and the family parked in the middle of the road, and they took forever to let their kid out and stuff. So I thought I should tell them just what I thought about that, how rude they were and how they were teaching their children bad things. And she said something about, I'm scaring her children. And I just couldn't get that out of my mind. And so 2 weeks later, I came to AA. I thought, you know, there's something wrong with me. I'm not sure what it is. I wasn't drinking. I would drink at night at 5 o'clock. I'd have 4 ounces of whiskey. I'd fall asleep. That would be it. I'd wake up the next morning and be a real bitch because, you know, it's like, is it 5 o'clock yet? Is it 5 o'clock yet? And it wasn't. So I came into AA, and I'm sort of an isolator by nature. And it took a while to get comfortable. I got involved in service the first after five months, and I started doing the newsletter. And the newsletter has really been an opportunity for me to do research and to sort of look at my own stuff. And that's kind of what I put in there. I don't know if anybody reads it or notices that, but it's about my healing, and it's really been tremendous. I can tell you now that this chapter of my life is the best I've ever had. I'm not alone anymore. I'm not scared the way I used to be scared. And if I do get scared, there are always people I can talk to. And as far as my son, who is a guest of the city of Los Angeles right now, I get to see people coming into this meeting, young people, that stay, that grow, that flourish. So I may not have my son, and I don't have my sisters because they don't speak to me for various reasons, but I have sisters in AA. And I don't have parents, but I have people here. I have a whole family, which is something I never had growing up, and I now am comfortable with that. It was overwhelming the first year or so, but now I'm comfortable with that. All I can say is I am very grateful. I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to all of you because all of you have helped me stay sober. You're up, Lynn. It's your turn. Thank you very much.
No more reading? All right, so now, okay, please welcome Marlene to the podium to read the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, which are the